It's Wednesday, the 6th of April, 2016. Happy birthday to Luis Montero and Spencer Dinwiddie. The Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Monster Show, brought to you by moneyball.com.au and TR3Vans11. It's my man TR Evans again, back sponsoring the podcast. If you want to be like TR3Vans11 and sponsor the show for a day, all you need to do is leave a review on iTunes. It is very straightforward. It takes about 2 minutes and it helps the show out. So thank you to Mr. Evans there, who's been a prolific sponsor of the podcast. It's been great having him on board and helping the show out a lot. Of course, Moneyball has been with the show all season, providing great sponsorship, and they've been providing great entertainment for everyone in Australia and New Zealand. They are the best DFS site in Australia and New Zealand. So if you live down under, make sure you're checking them out, not just for NBA. You've got all sorts of local sports, AFL, NRL, A-League, Premier League, soccer, baseball, NFL when that kicks back off. Plenty of stuff happening on Moneyball, so make sure you're joining in there. We had a very interesting day in the NBA today. We had a lot of games, 11 of them. We've got 8 of them again tomorrow, so there's a lot to talk about. So
let's get to it.
All right, before we get into the usual way that we go about these things on the podcast with Monstrous Lions of the Night and all that sort of stuff, I am joined by another winner of one of the Red Rock Listener Leagues, this one, the Hersey Hawkins division. I'm joined by Haralabos Volgaris' best mate, Simon Smith. Smitty, how are you going?
Hi, Josh. Thanks for having me.
Not a problem. Now, Smitty, I say that you're Bob Volgaris' best mate because you and Harella Bob get into a little bit of discussions on Twitter occasionally, and he retweets you quite a bit, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, I had a bit of luck at the start. I had a couple of things where he sort of appreciated, but no luck as of the last couple of months. He's pretty hard to get a hold of, as you're probably aware of, so yeah. Keep trying.
Well, once you get a couple of retweets from Harella Bob, I think you're going all right. You've done that well so far. Now, bit of a disclosure: yeah. Myself and Simon, we went to school together. We played played a fair bit of cricket together. We went, you're 1 year above me at school, but we've known each other for quite a while. And then Smitty stumbled across the podcast and joined the Listen League. And I believe you absolutely dominated the Hersey Hawkins division. Is that fair to say?
I wouldn't say I dominated. I probably put in more time than some of the other. I think there was a few guys that pulled out early days because there was, you could just tell that people weren't adjusting the lineups on a daily basis and that sort of stuff. Yep. But the draft was lucked out with Steph Curry pick 4, which was pretty amazing. And then you sort of roll from there and you try and get your categories sorted, and it's a luck. And yeah, so.
Well, you get Steph Curry at pick 4. It's a pretty big leg up. You know, Davis went at 1, which is pretty much the standard in most leagues. Then LeBron at 2 and James Harden at 3. So you didn't luck into Curry, but that's a pretty big price to fall into your lap there, I would say.
Oh, definitely, yeah. I mean, I was expecting to pick maybe Westbrook, LeBron, Cousins, one of those sort of guys at pick 4. But I managed to get Steph, and then next couple, I think, were Drummond and DeAndre Jordan. So I was just trying to wrap up rebounds and blocks and blah, blah, blah. And then I managed to get Dwight Howard in the 7th round. And, sort of from there on, it's a bit of a crapshoot, really, the last 3 or 4 picks. And then you're sort of doing a lot of, daily pickups during the year because guys get injured and whatnot. So, but it's great fun. I love it.
Oh, what you say there is absolutely correct. Cool.
Okay. What you say there is absolutely correct.
Cool. Bit of echo there. And you're adding. What's going on, Smitty?
I'm here.
You okay?
I can just hear my own voice echoing back.
Yeah.
All right. We'll see. We'll work through that. You adding Drummond and Jordan to pick 2 or 3. It's obviously what your strategy was. You were punting free throws. And Curry's the perfect guy to pair with those guys.
Sorry, I just lost you a bit there. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Sorry, I don't know what's going on there. But you added. Adding Drummond and Jordan makes it a great pairing with Curry. Despite his great free throws, that's not his biggest benefit to a team.
Can you just give me 1 minute? I think this is something might be on my end. Is that okay? Sorry about this.
Not a problem, just, Smitty.
Not a problem.
Just 1 sec.
All right. Well, while Simon tries to get that sorted, well, and I mentioned on yesterday's podcast that ESPN was stuffing me around with the winners of the leagues. It turns out that in the Sleepy Floyd division, that Corey Van Hetwelt actually got the victory because there was a stat correction in that league. So initially I announced Corey as the winner, then it was Peyton as the winner, and now it's back to Corey as the winner. So Corey, congratulations, you are the winner of the Sleepy Floyd division. And also one other league that I had failed to mention, the non-traditional categories league, where we did it where we didn't have any of the standard categories, and we had other things like offensive rebounds, we had adjusted field goal percentage, we had a whole bunch of other stats in there. Aaron Zimmerman took that one out, so congratulations to Aaron for getting that victory in the non-traditional categories league. Now Simon will try and get this sorted out, and he can get back on the podcast. Simon, yeah, any luck?
Yep. Here now. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. I think we're all back to normal. Now, what I was trying to say before my own echo kept interrupting myself is that you paired Jordan and Drummond with pick 2 and 3 with Curry, and a lot of people might look at that and go, Steph Curry's a 90% free throw shooter. Why are you doing that? But from a fantasy point of view, the fact that Curry doesn't have a huge amount of attempts means that it's not his biggest value. His value is scoring. It's threes. It's high field goal percentage. It's his high rebounds as a point guard. It's his steal rate. It's not his free throws. And then you're locking up points and threes and rebounds and blocks and field goal percentage as well. I think it's a great strategy that not too many people employ. Is that how you were looking at it?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, I'm fairly novice to it, but I mean, I wasn't terribly worried about, so I was more or less just trying to, lock up at least 3 or 4, like whether it's, assists. So I got Rubio, I think he was my 4th pick. So I was trying to get him and obviously Steph, and then DeAndre and Drummond get decent points and then go from there. So, even though Steph's obviously free throws are amazing, I wasn't just trying to worry about free throws, just making everything sort of worried. Dependent on free throw shooting, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's a great way to approach it. And obviously it worked out well to you because you think you ended the season with a pretty impressive 79-46 record. So, yeah, fair to say you did have that league sort of under control for most of the season. But some nice pickups there. Gaz Harris off the waiver wire. Josh Richardson added to your team. A few other guys there. Shelvin Mack, a nice late season addition as well. So you handled that league pretty well, and you're going to have a place in the in the Champions League next season, along with myself and Matt and Joey from yesterday's podcast, and all those other guys that we mentioned too. So you'll be in that league with us next season, and should be an interesting contest next year. Now, Smitty, I'm going to go through the through the monstrous line of the night and all that sort of stuff. You can stick around for that.
Yeah, sounds good.
Now, before I do that though, Smitty, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, which is SeatGeek. Now, last season, Plenty of people won't know this, but you headed across to the States from Melbourne and went across to the NBA Finals. You had to get your tickets, all that in advance. I would say that if you were doing it again this year, Smitty, that SeatGeek would not only save you money, but also make it easier for you to do that. People get frustrated buying tickets online. It can be complicated. People try to sneak in huge fees, but SeatGeek doesn't do that. It makes it easier to buy and sell tickets for sports and concert events. Simon, if you're going over there again, I would highly recommend you use SeatGeek Plus. So, if you use the RedRock code, which is all one word, you get yourself $20 off. It's straightforward. $20 back on your first purchase by using that promo code RedRock when you go to buy your tickets on SeatGeek. Very straightforward. SeatGeek takes all the work and hassle out of shopping for tickets. They pull all the tickets available on other sites into one place. You save time and never miss a deal. You can even set alerts for upcoming events, and SeatGeek will let you know if the ticket prices fall. Even better, every ticket on SeatGeek is ranked based on value, so you can immediately find underpriced seats. Before you buy, you can use SeatGeek's detailed maps to see the view from your seat. They're always honest and upfront about the price, and unlike StubHub, they show you the full ticket price from start to finish. To get your $20 rebate on tickets, you download the free SeatGeek app. Now, Smitty, if you've got your phone handy there, I suggest you go and download that app. Go to the Settings tab and click Add a Promo Code, and enter that promo code, which is REDROCK, and when you make your first purchase, you'll get $20 back. It doesn't get any better than that. So download the free SeatGeek app and enter the promo code REDROCK today. Now, let's have a quick chat, actually, before we get into the monstrous line of the night. So you made that journey across to the States last year for the NBA Finals. For someone that lives outside the US and has got to make a big big trip over there. How did you make the decision of, and how far in advance did you book where you're going to go? Did you go, look, it looks like it's going to be Cleveland, Golden State. I'm going to book these hotels and that in advance. If it doesn't work out, then oh well. Or did you do it really sort of fly by the seat of your pants? Let's do it as it's happening.
No, I pretty much just, I'd sort of banked, I sort of guessed in a way, obviously probably 3 months out that Cleveland were going to make it. I was, you know, I mean, I booked a hotel in Atlanta just in case, but I was able to cancel that because you can cancel pretty much up until a couple of days before. So I just looked at it realistically and thought Cleveland would be probably a lot cheaper to get in terms of tickets and a lot easier. I mean, I was staying next door to the arena, so that saved a lot of time and hassle and whatnot. And it was just, yeah, pot luck and tickets were, yeah. I mean, they were pretty, I mean, you could get them for a couple of days before the game. It was just a matter of where and how much you had to pay. So.
Whereabouts did you see, did you have tickets right at the back or you were down pretty close?
Pretty much sort of probably 10 rows from the back, right at the back. So, I mean, the atmosphere, game three was just out of this world. That was the Della Vadova game where he went crazy. But they probably cheered for Delhi about 10 times louder than they did LeBron because it was, I mean, LeBron had 40, I think, game three. But the seats were, I mean, anywhere you sit there, the seats are fantastic. Yeah, the atmosphere was just, you know, it's hard to describe until you actually, you know, sort of sit there.
So, okay, so that was my next question. Like, how loud are we talking inside this arena? It's finals, it's Cleveland, LeBron's back there, it's game three, first game in his return to Cleveland in the NBA finals. Like, what's it like? Like, how loud are we talking here?
It's hard. Like, you can probably go to an AFL grand final or you can go to anything. I don't know. It was insane. I mean, after the game, it was literally like they'd won the finals. I mean, you're up 2-1 against the Warriors with another game at home, and you know you could go up 3-1. So it was insane. I mean, the Warriors came right back at the end. They went crazy in the last quarter, but game three was just it's hard to describe until you're there. It was amazing.
So I'm assuming you'd recommend it to everyone to try and get the opportunity to head to a finals game somewhere.
Oh, I mean, without question. I mean, there's probably a fair chance that it is a repeat this year. I mean, all things going well.
Yep.
I'd imagine if you wanted, yeah, Cleveland would be definitely more financially viable because San Francisco itself is incredibly expensive, just everything. Yeah, well, cabs. Yeah.
My brother lives in San Francisco now, so I'm set if I need to go over there for one of those games.
Oh, you're safe. You're safe. It's yeah, I mean, going off track, I got to go to a Warriors game just recently, and that was awesome. But it was just getting to and from the arena was cost in itself. So Cleveland's, financially, it's probably a lot easier.
Yeah, because the Warriors arena's over in Oakland, isn't it?
Yeah, so you're basically going from San Fran over to Oakland, and when I was there, it was sort of 6 o'clock at night, so you got peak hour traffic and whatnot, and yeah. You know, you're up for a bit. I mean, I didn't have view, but so I was up for about $70 US for a taxi, and that's one way. It's like,
yeah, that's crazy.
So, yeah, so it's crazy. So.
You met a few people over there when you were there. A couple of people in the elevators with you.
Yes. So, I mean, you sort of chat. I mean, just how you going, Draymond Green? I was, you know, in one lift. Ron Adams, just myself and him. How you going? Overheard Alvin Gentry talking to some of the other assistants, whilst, you know, David Lee, and you know, you're just dropping names. It seems like I'm a bit of a hero, but it's very surreal. You jump out of the lift, and there's Harrison Barnes, there's the NBA TV camera crew, you know, jump in the gym, and Adam Silver's, you know, on the bike. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it's a weird feeling just being around these guys and just seeing them just going about their everyday business. I remember when I was back at Summer League and going to the buffet for breakfast and walking out, and as I'm walking out, Justice Winslow's walking in to get his breakfast, and you just go like, what's going on? And then they're just here eating breakfast at a hotel, but it's a weird feeling just walking past and going, yeah, this, I know this guy, look from a distance, oh yeah, that's just Justice Winslow going in to grab himself a plate of eggs or whatever he was having for breakfast. Now, Smitty, let's talk about these monstrous line of the night. Well, not these, just this one of them, the monstrous line of the night. And today I'm going with Rick Rubio. I'm going with Rajon Rondo, another one of the point guards with the double R. Rondo had another triple-double. This is definitely the season of triple-doubles in the NBA. Rondo played 42 minutes. The Kings couldn't get the victory, but he went 27, 10, and 12 with three triples and two steals and a very un-Rondo-like 11 of 17 from the field. His season this year has been very surprising to me. I thought he was absolutely toast when he was in Dallas. He looked terrible. And to be honest, his actual play hasn't been awesome this year. His defense is poor. His offense can be poor as well. But statistically, he's been a top 25 player this year. Did you see anything in Rondo being anywhere near this good this year?
Probably not, no. I thought Collison would play majority of the minutes, and I thought Rondo would be a bit of an up. I mean, obviously, they gave him 1 year for $9 million, so obviously they invested somewhat in him. But, I mean, not 12 assists, and whatnot, 10 rebounds and 10 points.
He's averaging 12, 6, and 12, and 11 and a half with two steals. He's actually hitting a three a game as well, which is something you don't expect from him. And he's at 45% from the field. When his last 2 years, he's been at 43 and 40. And you look at him and he shoots 58% from the free throw line. And that's shit house. For a point guard, it's terrible. But it's on two attempts. So the actual negative impact of it is very minimal. In fact, when you look at it in terms of standard scores and Z scores for Rondo, his impact from his lack of blocks is actually more impactful than his free throw percentage. It's negative 0.91 for blocks and negative 0.83 for free throws. So you have to do more to recover from his lack of blocks than you do for his poor free throw shooting. And on the surface, you'd go, okay, he's a point guard, he doesn't block shots, whatever, and that free throws are terrible. But you add someone in who's a good free throw shooter, you easily overcome that because it's on so few attempts. And that's something that people might get confused about. If they go, oh, 58%, can't deal with that, can't deal with the free throws. It is very easy to overcome that sort of shooting. If it's on eight attempts, then you're in real trouble. But on two attempts, it's recoverable. Now, I don't know what happens with Rondo next season. I think he's going to get overpaid. He could fall off. I think he's going to be a big overdrafted player next year, depending on where he ends up. If it's back in Sacramento, maybe it's okay. But if he goes somewhere else, there could be issues. There could be a coach that actually doesn't let him do whatever he wants, like they've done in Sacramento. There's a lot of things that could change with Rondo, but I'm a bit concerned about. I don't think I'll end up drafting him next year, is what I'm trying to say, because I don't think he'll be this good again. The waiver wire line of the night, we're going to go to the Warriors, who we've spoken a little bit about tonight, and we're going to talk about their surprise, not even surprise, absolutely shocking loss to the Minnesota Timberwolves at home. My brother was actually at this game, so great game to go and see. Went to overtime, and the Timberwolves got a big victory, and in part, it was to do with Shabazz Muhammad off the bench, who played 39 minutes and had 35 points. He was 9 of 12 from the field. He hit two threes and had six rebounds. Not much else, but such big scoring and such huge field goal percentage. Plus, he went 15 of 17 from the free throw line, which is massive impact as well. A massive night from Shabazz Muhammad, who had been absolutely marginalized over the last 3 months, barely getting to 20 minutes a night. This is one completely out of the blue from Shabazz. I don't have massive hopes for him as a fantasy prospect. Do you see anything in Shabazz Muhammad at all, Simon?
I gave him a couple of goes this year because he was always on and off the sort of the waiver and whatnot, and he would, you know, throw up a 25. You pick him up in the next three games, he'd just give you a zero, and then you I'll get rid of him and try someone else. But it's pretty hard when Sam Mitchell's your coach. I would have thought.
Yep, so, that's true.
And I just had a look then. He was plus 29.
Yeah, those games. So that's why he got the extra minutes as well. They went, and it happens a lot, opposition playing against the Warriors, they go small. So Gorgui Dieng got really minimized here, and Shabazz was hot, obviously. He was hot. They went small. He got to play. And his best position probably is the four, to be honest, Muhammad, but he just has no ability to pass, basically. He just doesn't pass. He's averaging 0.6 assists per game this year, which is horrifically bad in 21 minutes. He's a big, just going to get the ball, put my head down and drive. He's not a good three-point shooter in general. He's at 29% on the season. Nice game tonight, but I don't know. To me, he's not going to be really ever a great fantasy guy, because what he'll be is a guy who can score if he gets a big role. He'll score. He'll get a pretty good field goal percentage. He'll get great offensive rebounding numbers, but he doesn't do enough in any of the other areas. And he'd be one of those guys that, oh, look, Shabazz dropped You know, he's averaging 18 points if he's in a big role, but it'll obscure him doing nothing in the other areas, and that's something that people sometimes get wrapped up in. Speaking of Sam Mitchell, got a text from my brother as the game was starting, and he goes, when you get a chance, go and have a look at the suit that Sam Mitchell's wearing. Now, I haven't had a look at it yet, but have you seen it?
Yeah, I saw it. It was a bony sort of baggy type of, I don't know what.
Yeah, that's he described, I'll just get the message up. He sent me a picture of someone wearing a beige suit, a bit Richie Beno-ish. Yeah. He said, but it's a size 48 and plus 2 in length. I go, fair enough. And then if you just go and do it, I did a Twitter search for Sam Mitchell's suit, and it was just plenty of pictures of him in these suits that are just massively baggy around his ankles. They go down almost to his knees, 3 buttons down the middle. It's legitimately straight out of 1994. Much like his offensive gameplay.
I was going to say that. It's like early 90s, and I think he's the only coach with an earring as well, isn't he? So it's sort of...
I need to do some research on that, but I would be shocked if there's any other coaches out there with an earring. I didn't. he is a weird unit. Oh, I enjoy that. The young gun of the night. We're going to stay in Minnesota, Smitty, and we're going to look at Andrew Wiggins, who played 42 minutes in the massive win here, 32-5-4, and had 6 steals with 2 triples. He was great percentage wise as well, 11 of 19 from the field, and he went 8 of 9 from the free throw line. Now, Wiggins has turned it on significantly in the second half of the year. He is, over the last month, he's ranked 30th. And for big chunks of the season, he was outside the top 100. He's now into 82 on the season, but he's looking a lot better because the scoring's been there all year. But the last month, he's giving you over a 3 a game, and he's shooting those at 40%. He's giving you 4 rebounds, which still could do with some work, and 2.4 assists, but they're both up on his season numbers. But where it really comes in is he's giving you 1.7 steals. He's shooting 50% from the field, and he's shooting 80% from the line, which, again, the season numbers are at 46 and 76. So much improved player in the second half. Do you take him in the top 50 next year?
I don't know. I'm not really sure. He's sort of borderline.
I don't know either.
Yeah, I mean, you're definitely a lot more knowledgeable than I am, much more. But the points are probably going to be there. It's just the rebounds, it's just all the accessory sort of categories. You just don't know what you're going to get. So it's, I don't know.
Well, look, I said he's shooting 50% over the last month. Over the last 3 months, he's shooting 48%. So if you're going to get 21 points on 48% shooting and he's now going to give you 1.5 steals and 1-3, I think that I'll be in at the top 50. Now, probably at 2-3 weeks ago, I said, I'm not sure. I think he might get overdrafted. I'm looking at his numbers now and they're just consistently improving. The rebounds and assists still need to get better, but if he's giving the steals, the threes, and those 2 great percentages, plus 20 points scoring, he's going to go in the top 50. You're not going to be able to get him outside the top 50, I'm pretty sure, and it doesn't feel like a stupid bet at this point. But if you had asked me a month ago, I would have said, I don't think I'm going to be going that high on Wigo. So he's putting up some decent numbers at the moment. The dud of the night, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, was not good. He played 25 minutes, and he had 2 points, and that's it. He had nothing else. He missed 5 of his 6 shots. He had no rebounds, assists, steals, blocks, or 3-pointers. He turned the ball over twice. Just a horrendous performance from Caldwell-Pope. And over the last 2 weeks, he is ranked 246th. He is really struggling, just shooting 33% from the field. But I reckon if you own Kentavious Caldwell-Pope in any leagues that's still continuing, you'd be well aware that your field goal percentage is in trouble anyway, because he's only at 42% on the year on 12.6 attempts. So a drop to 33%, yes, it's tough, but I reckon you would have been losing that category most weeks anyway. The problem is he's only averaging 11 points, and his steals are under 1 a game, and he needs to be a 1.5 threes, 1.5 steals sort of guy. Are you a Caldwell-Pope fan, or do you think he's not someone who's going to be a good NBA starter?
I actually got to see the Pistons over Christmas, so I saw them 1 game against New York, and he was terrible, so... Just from my personal experience, I wouldn't have thought. I mean, I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, Jody Meeks has been out for the whole season, so, he could have potentially taken some of his minutes anyway, but I don't. I mean, I don't really rate him that much.
His defense is good. I really think he's a good defender, but, look, he's played 37 minutes a game this year, and he's still only giving you 14.5 points, and he's just barely inside the top 100. He's still a pretty young player. This is only his third season. Next year, really shapes as a make or break type of campaign for him, I think. And that's the season that a lot of players do show significant growth in, that fourth season. So I think that we could be seeing something happening with him. He's played over 30 minutes the last 2 years. I think the Van Gundy does really like him. Yeah, Meeks has struggled all season with the foot and with the shoulder issue, but I'm not really sure that Meeks is the answer here. Interesting to see what they do with the Pistons, but I do think that he'll be better than this stretch anyway. But I think if you need to drop him in a league because you weren't prepared for this field goal percentage, then it's by no means a great, huge loss or anything like that. Smitty, thank you for coming on, and thank you for having a chat, and thank you for participating in the Listener League. It was great to have you in there. You're obviously in the Red Rock Dynasty League as well. You weren't so successful in that one this year.
No, I was very unsuccessful. My team was terrible. Obviously, it was my first attempt at a dynasty, and I pretty much had to clear most of the players because I had so many, long contracts and all that sort of stuff. So I've got a bit of cap space and picks, so it's just sort of a wait and see how next year goes. But yeah, this year was a write off for that. But it's great to find a lot of guys that obviously are very experienced, like yourself and Mark Roberts and those sort of guys. So it's terrific.
Now, you've got the second pick in the rookie draft, am I correct?
Yeah.
So, assuming that Kevin's going to take Ben Simmons at number one, have you had any look at any of the rookies coming in, or any thoughts through watching March Madness of anyone that you would look to grab at pick two?
To be completely honest, I really don't. Sorry, I'd like to answer the question, but I don't. So
I haven't looked at it either. So I've got no idea. I was getting some assistance from you there if you'd looked at it, but I've got no idea at this point either.
Yeah, I'm probably in the same boat. I'm pretty much just NBA, and then you probably follow the NCAA, and you probably just listen to podcasts and read articles and that sort of stuff. But I really don't know.
I'm right there with you, mate. So thank you for coming on. Thank you for coming on the podcast. Thanks for being in the league. If anyone wants to follow you on Twitter, where do they find you on Twitter, Simon?
At Simon A. Benedict.
So go on. You can go and join or follow Simon there. See his interactions with Harala Bob. See his tweeting from when he makes his frequent trips to the States to go watch some NBA games. You're heading back to the finals this year?
No, not this year. I'm probably going to go over, but later in the year, but not the finals, but it should be fun.
No worries. It was good chatting to you, Simon, so thank you for coming on, and I'll speak to you soon.
Thanks, Josh. Thanks for having me.
No worries. All right, so Simon is gone. All right. Let's get back into the rest of the podcast. Now, let's look at the perfect DFS lineup from Tuesday's games. At point guard, Rajon Rondo with 59. Steph Curry had 53.7. Those two were pretty much locks to get in there. At shooting guard, Jezza Lynn, 35.3. Had a big game with Nick Batum. We did talk about that yesterday. 35.3 is pretty decent, but at his salary, it's a really nice return. And Devin Booker went for 45. I was a bit worried about using Devin Booker yesterday, but he definitely came through. He hadn't been producing like this over the last couple of weeks, but this is a great game. Kent Bazemore, another guy that I didn't have a great DFS day, to be honest. Kent Bazemore, 44.3, not a massive Bazemore fan. Wigo went for 51. Paul Millsap, that was one I got right, 56.4 for him. And Zach Randolph at 47 was always in a great spot with the trash that surrounds him in Memphis, and B, the trash that he was going up against. And we'll talk about the Bulls a bit later. And at center, Andy Bogut went for 40.5. Didn't know he was going to play, so he was dealing with that rib issue. Came in, kicked ass, took names, chewed bubblegum, whatever he needed to do. The total there was 432.2, so some pretty significant scoring would have come out of that one. All right, let's get into these games now and look at the box scores in a little bit more detail. Bring that up on the screen for you guys who are watching along on the video. I'll get that up for you now. All right, got that up there on the screen for you. The first game we're going to have a look at, if I could get my screen happening, is the New Orleans Pelicans and the Philadelphia 76ers. And the Sixers, they did it. They got a victory. They didn't break their record. They avoided tying the record for fewest wins in the season by getting this victory. The Pelicans are terrible, we know that, but that doesn't mean there's not fantasy value. So let's start with them. Timmy Frazier moved into the starting lineup and played 36 minutes. He went 12, 6, and 9 and had 3 steals. Unsurprisingly, Norris Cole was out again. Ryan Anderson apparently needs surgery for his sports hernia. Don't think we see him this season, and I'd be shocked if we saw Cole again. So Frazier is a guy you should own in all formats. Dante Cunningham had a big game, and I mentioned this, I don't know when, that he is going to have a big game, and he's going to get hot, and he's going to shoot, and he went 7 of 9 for 19 points with 3 triples. He won't do it again, so don't buy too much into Dante Cunningham. He's more of a deeper league guy. Lukey Babbitt, 16, 8, and 3 with 2 triples. Fine to use him. Jordy Hamilton went back to the bench and played 27 minutes. They're still getting minutes. 8 and 8 with 2 assists and a steal. I still like him for 12 team leagues. Jim Ennis played 30 minutes. Not so great a line from him. 11, 1, and 2 with a 3 and a block. But basically, there's no one else healthy on this team, so everyone's going to get 25-plus minutes, especially when Omar Asik is just completely excised from the rotation. Finally, Asik moved to the bench and then did not play at all because he's terrible. Kendrick Perkins got 23 off the bench. He went 8-7. He's not a real fantasy option. But my man, Alexia Ginsa, played 25 as the starter. Still 5 minutes too few, but 12-10 on 6 of 12 shooting. No other ancillary stats, but they will come. I love a Ginsa as an ad in pretty much all formats. While Tone Douglas has struggled the last couple of games. 7-7 here. He played 37 minutes, had a 3 and a steal. But he still does have value. But I would take Frazier. I would take Babbitt. I would take Hamilton. And I'll take a Ginsa over Douglas at this point, unless I just really need to key in on guard stats. But he has struggled probably the last 3 or 4, and Frazier has definitely taken over as the guard you want to own in New Orleans. What a collection of sentences that was when talking about a team. Speaking of a team with weird performances, the Philadelphia 76ers, Carl Landry, played 26 off the bench and went 22-9. He hit 9 of 10 shots. He had 2 threes. He had 2 steals. The Philadelphia crowd was chanting, MVP at Carl Landry. That's how things were going in Philadelphia. I love Landry for a guy that's going to be a high field goal, points and rebounds guy. Get 2 threes, it's a real bonus for him. Although he's hitting a few more threes than I expected recently, he's not going to play 30 minutes. He's going to be 22 to 24 minutes most nights. And it's going to be useful. It's going to be useful in the deeper formats or if you just need a bump in those categories. Bob Cove really hurt your field goals. 3 of 16, but 12, 9 and 3 with 4 steals, a 3 and a block. Contributed brilliantly in the other areas, plus hit all 5 of his free throws. While Nerlens Noel did return, he only played 18 off the bench, though 4 and 6 with a block. You probably should have already dropped him if you did own him. Would I go and rush to pick him up? I don't know if rush is the right term, but I would consider it. But I don't think that he's going to be playing 30 minutes for the rest of the season just because, you know, he's got a sore knee. The Sixers have got few games left. So what's the point of getting him out there? They've beaten this, avoided setting the mark for the fewest wins in a season. Is there much incentive for him to play? They've got 4 more games left, including a back-to-back at the end of the season. I say that Noel plays 3 of these games out of these 4 at maximum. So, yeah, we know what he can do, but I just don't think he's going to be at full capacity. Jeremy Grant played 24 minutes, 10-3 with 2 steals. Don't love him, to be honest. And Elton Brand got the start and had 2-4 in 11 minutes. Ish Smith struggled in his return to New Orleans. 8 points, 2 rebounds, 6 assists, but did have 2 blocks. So the 6 assists and 2 blocks is nice. While Isaiah Cannon drilled another 4 triples for 16 points in 23 minutes. He gives you nothing but a lot of threes. Same with Hollis Thompson, who went 13-2-4 with 3 triples in his 22 minutes. And TJ McConnell, one of the best streaming guys for assists. He had 8 dimes in his 18 minutes here, while Sauce Castillo went 13-2-6 in 34 minutes. I wouldn't be banking on 34 minutes from Castillo too often. And if you don't know who that is Nick Stauskas, obviously. Charlotte and Toronto. No Nick Batum, so Jeremy Lin started, played 40 minutes and went 21-4-7 with 4 triples and a steal. Love him while Batum is out. No point when Batum is in. Marv Williams, 15-6-1 with 3 threes and 2 steals. While Cody Zeller played just 19 minutes in this game. Don't really know why. 9 points, 6 rebounds, 2 blocks. Great numbers yet again. But just, I'd love him to get 30 minutes to be a real 12-team league guy. He's probably an okay 12-league guy now, but not great. Courtney Lee, 11-2-2 with a steal and a block. He gets that little bit of an extra bump with Batum out as well, but it's not something that makes me run to grab him. Well, Kemba had 11-2-4, and Frank Kaminsky played 30 minutes, 9-6 with 2 triples in the extra run there created by Zeller's low playing time. Al Jefferson played through his quad injury. He was 2 of 9 for just 5 points. He did grab 11 rebounds, but you probably don't want me to go on an Al Jefferson rant again. For the Raptors, DeMar DeRozan was back. Kyle Lowry was back. DeRozan went 26-7-6. He hit a 3. He had a steal, and he was a stellar 11 of 12 from the free throw line. just 7 of 19 from the field, but you can sort of come to expect that from DeMar. And Jonas Valanciunas, another big night. I just love this guy. 12 and 12 in 28 minutes for Valanciunas. 3 blocks on 5 of 8 shooting. Pretty big numbers from Valanciunas. He's been superb since getting back into the starting lineup after that hand injury, and I can't wait for him to, at any point, be unleashed. Maybe it won't ever happen, but if it does, I can't wait. Kyle Lowry, 21, 4 and 6, and actually went 8 of 16 from the field, which is a bonus considering what he's been giving you lately, while Corey Joseph returned to the bench and had 11, 4 and 2 in 25 minutes. Let's check on one of my boyfriends, Normie Powell. He only played 23 minutes here, 4 and 4 with 2 steals, so a little bit of a disappointment from Powell. I still think that he can be owned in 12-team leagues, but by no means is he a lock at that position. Terrence Ross struggled as well, 4 and 4 in his 21, while Pat had went 10, 3 and 3 with 2 steals in 28 minutes. Bismack Biyombo, 7 boards and 3 blocks in 20 minutes. He's a great stream for that, but you know, 1 of 5 from the field, 1 of 6 from the free throw line, and doesn't do much in the other areas. It really limits his ability to be owned, especially in this backup role. The next game, the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Milwaukee Bucks. LeBron only played 28 minutes. This game was an absolute destruction. 17, 5, and 9 for LeBron. Love went 17, 9, and 3, and Kyrie was back and played 27 minutes and went 15, 3, and 6. But J.R. Smith, another red-hot night. 21 points, all from 3. 7 triples, 2 rebounds, 1 assist, and 1 steal. That's 2 big games in a row from J.R. The chances of that continuing for too long is pretty low, but we know that he's a great source of threes. That's really about it. Has not been electrifying at all. Tristan Thompson only got 18 minutes, and Tim Mozgov played 22. All in all, it was just a complete spread out of the minutes. When everyone's healthy and Mo Williams plays 10 minutes, you know the game was a blowout. So don't look too much into all this from the Cavs. For the Bucks, Giannis Antetokounmpo played 39 minutes, 22, 14, and 8. He hit 2 triples. So after I went on a massive discussion about Giannis, talking about how he hit no threes, I think he's hit about 5 threes since I mentioned that. That's obviously great for his value if he can start doing that. 22, 14, and 8 is a pretty decent performance. Had a steal and went 10 of 18 from the field. Johnny O'Brien. There was no Chris Middleton. There was no Jared Bayless. So Job got the start. He played 31 minutes and went 12 and 7. That is a Jason Kidd special, that one. Not going to read too much into it. He barely played prior to this, but let's just keep an eye on things. Greg Monroe, just 25 minutes. Yeah. 8 and 5 with 2 assists and a steal. He's droppable to me, Greg Monroe, if you're just desperate to cycle games, and he's just not playing anywhere near enough minutes. Rashad Vaughn, he played a lot of minutes, 45 of them, in fact. 10, 2, and 1. He had 3 steals, a block, and 2 triples, and took 17 shots. It's a pity he only hit 4 of them, because he's obviously getting a lot of looks on offense. He's going to continue to have a pretty decent role, but it's not going to be really interesting for me for standard leagues. Tyler Ennis played 28. He struggled, 4 and 4, 2 assists and 2 steals. Still has some intrigue, though, while Jabari Parker was a very inefficient, going 7 of 19 and 5 of 10, but had 19 points and had 4 assists, so not a complete waste. Speaking of complete waste, John Henson, just absolutely disregarded, and I regret speaking out a couple of weeks ago and saying that it looks like that kid finally doesn't hate John Henson anymore, when it's clear he just despises everything about him because he just refuses to play him. At any time, when the front office has invested money in John Henson, you don't have to play stinkers like Johnny O'Brien out there and play them 31 minutes. You don't have to play Miles Plumlee 20 minutes. You need to play John Henson. And I don't understand why Kidd just hates him so much. I'm not saying to play him 30 minutes, but 6 minutes is bullshit. Or 7 minutes, actually. The next game. How long have you got? Who wants to go take a break for 20 minutes while I discuss the Chicago Bulls? Because this team is, I said yesterday, if the Bulls lose to the Grizzlies, they should just pack it in and they should give it up for the season. They should go, we're not playing the rest of these games. Let's hand our jerseys over. Or we're done. Well, they did. They lost to a team that is legit not even the Memphis Grizzlies. A team that's running out guys that are named Jordan Farmer, Xavier Munford, Jarrell Martin, and Bryce Cotton's playing for them. The Bulls, you're fighting for a playoff berth. Fight. Anyway, Nikola Mirotic played 29 minutes. That's a positive sign. He went 20 and 8. He had 6 triples, 3 assists, 1 steal, and 1 block. This guy is absolutely on fire. You know that I'm a big Nikola Mirotic fan. You know that I think that he can do way more than he's shown all season. He has been, over the last week, a top 45 player. He's been ranked 53rd over the last 2 weeks in only 28 and a half minutes, averaging 17 points, 5 rebounds, 3.8 triples, 0.3 steals and 0.3 blocks, which are actually really low. He can be easily be a triple one player. He can be a 20-7 guy with 2.5 threes and a steal and a block. Yeah, pretty comfortably, plus a 90% free throw guy. Looks really good at the moment. Whether he can maintain that, it's always the risk, and whether he can stay on the court long enough to maintain that is another concern. But he's looking good, and the shots are falling with a ridiculous regularity at the moment, and he is hitting his threes significantly. Over the last 2 months, he's hitting 44% of threes. That's not like an unsustainable 60% Josh Richardson. This is like, this guy is a legit good shooter, and he is just banging threes in. Pau Gasol, 17-10. He had a steal. He had four blocks. A nice power night. Well, Bobby Porter's probably his best night as a starter. 19 minutes, 12-7 with a couple of blocks, and that's good, but I don't think it really translated to someone I really want to own. Mick Dunleavy played 19 minutes, had 5 points with a couple of blocks. And Derek Rose returned from his elbow issue. 35 minutes for Rosie, 12-5-8 with a steal, 5-15 shooting, but at least he's there. He's playing 35 minutes, so if you want to grab someone with a punt field goal situation in mind, Rose can be added because he would have been dropped in a lot of leagues. Jimmy Butler, what the hell's going on with this guy? Yeah, putrid. Unbelievable putrid. 5 points, 4 rebounds, 2 assists, and 1 steal on 2 of 8 shooting. Now, I don't know if there's a personal issue between him and Derrick Rose. We've heard rumors of it, and in the end, I don't give a shit whatsoever about if there's any personal issues. But basketball-wise, when they're together, it really impacts them. It impacts what they can do. And from a fantasy point of view, Butler was magnificent when Rose was out. Terrible when Rose is playing recently. I can't fully put my finger on it, but it's the case. Now, he's not going to be worse than this, Butler, but he's also probably not going to be as good as what he was in those games when Rose was out. And it's a real interesting corollary. I'll have to really look into it more throughout the offseason as well, but they just don't play well together. And they don't play to their peaks together. Dougie McDermott had 7 points, not a lot else. Well, Justin Holiday went back to 17 minutes, and he scored 9, and this was with Etuan Moore out with a hamstring problem, which is bothering him. Of course, the Bulls, if you get a hamstring injury and you come back, you're pretty much guaranteed to go out with that same hamstring injury again. Happened with Taj, happened with Etuan. Let the bloody thing heal. It's pretty straightforward. The Grizzlies, Zachy Randolph, 27-10-4, 2 steals. Turning into massive lines here. It's probably going to lead to him being overdrafted next year because people will look back and go, Zach Randolph's putting up some nice numbers at the end of the season. Not so sure. Jermichael Green had 24 minutes, 8-5 with 3 steals. I think he projects pretty well for the future for this team. But, yeah, you can do better in 12-teamers. Jordy Farmer back, well, not back starting because he started the last game, but he played just 15 minutes, but back getting big minutes, 31 here. 15-2-4 with a steal and a 3. I do like him for standard leagues. And Matty Barnes, 6-7-2 with 2 threes in 41 minutes. The minutes aren't going to be a problem for Barnes. It's whether things just completely fall to shit, which they could. This was a nice night. Vince Carter. What do you do with Vince Carter when he turns in a 17-5-4 line? He has 2 threes, he has 2 steals, and he has a block. Yeah, they're obviously really good numbers. Is he worth owning? I'm going to say he's more of a 14-team league guy. Because he is averaging 12 points a game over the last 2 weeks. 1.5 threes, a steal almost, 3 rebounds. Yeah. Some decent numbers, but nothing super spectacular. Tone Allen played almost 30 minutes, the most he's played in a while. 6 points, 9 rebounds, and 4 steals. And he obviously can rack up the steals at a big rate, and he's going to just be ownable for that sort of function. The Birdman started, had 4 points in 22 minutes. Jarrell Martin, Xavier Munford, not much to love with those guys. Lance Stephenson also did not play. Healthy scratch. He's just not good. The Phoenix Suns and the Atlanta Hawks. Ron Price, 14-3-4, 4 triples and 4 steals. What a fantastic performance from Price. I talked about him a bit yesterday. You have to consider owning him. He's going to get threes. He's going to get steals. He's going to be a terrible player on the court, but he's going to put up numbers. And with Brendan Knight out for the rest of the season, you got to look at him. Dev Booker played 39 minutes, 34-5-2, hit 4 triples, had 2 steals, and took 25 shots and hit 12 of them. I wouldn't be expecting that sort of efficiency moving forward. He was only 6 of 10 from the free throw line, but it's clear that he has to be owned. Or Tyson Chandler played 36 minutes and went 10-13, and Alex Len actually played 35, so that's a bonus. 10-7 with a steal and a block, but that subpar field goal percentage, just baffling. Well, not completely baffling. Play him at center. It's not hard. Mirza Tolevic played 28 minutes, 12-7 with three threes. Well, PJ Tucker had, speaking of off nights, 0 points on 0 of 8 shooting. He had 8 boards, he had 2 assists and a steal. You don't expect him to shoot like that, but I mentioned that his offensive game had been really good prior to this game. This is just the regression to the mean that we probably should have expected. Paulie Millsap was brilliant, 36 minutes, 13 points, but 17 rebounds, 8 assists, 3 steals, 3 blocks, 1 triple. Hard to argue with that sort of performance. And Kent Bazemore with a monster line as well. 34 minutes for Baze, 17-9-5 with 5 steals and 2 threes. Absolutely fine to go and add him, but you know, prior to these last couple of games, he'd been getting killed by Thabo Sefolosha and by Tim Hardaway, and it looked really, really terrible. And it's always when he has a good shooting night that everything else comes around for him. He was 7 of 13 from the field. He hit 2 of his 5 three-point shots. But if the shot doesn't fall, then a lot of the other stuff falls off for Bazemore. Jeff Teague, 20 points, 2 assists, 2 steals, and 3 triples. A nice, productive night there. Well, Dennis Schroeder, he was a probably decent punt option, but when you go 2 of 13 from the field for 4, 3, and 3 in 18 minutes, it makes it hard to be really valuable there. While Kyle Korver, in 29 minutes, just dropped a couple of threes and had 11 points with not a lot else, and he has been a real disappointment this season. Detroit and Miami, Toby Harris, just 29 minutes here for the Pistons. It was a blowout loss, so you'll see the minutes are spread quite a bit here for the Pistons. 21-7-2 for Toby. Reggie Jackson went 21-2-3. Drummond went 12-13. Marcus Morris had 1 point on 7 shots. Yuck. Stan Johnson went for 1 of 9 for 2 points, and I talked about Kentavious Caldwell-Pope already. Overall, looking at this box score and looking at this game, there's not much you can get from a positive point of view from Detroit, and it doesn't really influence us much in fantasy. For the Heat, Hassan Whiteside just 29 minutes off the bench, but 14-12 with a steal and 4 blocks, so a big performance from him. Goran Dragic went 22-5-8 with 4 threes, and Dwayne Wade was back. He only played 25 minutes, but hey, it's great that the Heat have him back out there. 16-1-2 with a couple of steals, so nice numbers there. And Joshy Richardson got hot yet again, 4 of 5 from 3 for 16 points. Didn't do anything in the other areas, but that's a pretty efficient shooting night and some nice points contributions. Joe Johnson, 11-1-5. He is not a must-own guy. And Justice Winslow, 9-5-2 in his 30 minutes. With Wade back, Gerald Green went back to 4 minutes. And I would say that if the game had been closer, he might not have played really much at all, probably even less than that. And Lu Deng went 12-8-5. The next game, the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Denver Nuggets. The Thunder with a pretty comfortable victory here. And as per usual, at this time of the year especially, when comfortable victories are there, players are going to sit. No one played over 30 minutes. Russ Westbrook got another triple-double, 13-14-12 with 2 threes and 2 steals. Durant went 26-5-8 with 3 steals. And Dion Waiters chimed in with 18 points, 5 assists, 4 steals and 3 triples. And you go, that's fantastic. But it's probably not going to happen very often. Or it's definitely not going to happen very often. We know what Waiters can do. He just doesn't do it anywhere near enough. Enes Kanter, this guy is just amazing in terms of what he can produce in short periods of time. 21 minutes, 18-11 with a block. There is very few centers who are as talented as him offensively and on the offensive glass. We know what his deficiencies are. Well, Serge Ibaka had 18 points, including 2 threes, no block shots for him, but he has been a massive disappointment, obviously, this year. The minutes were then spread throughout the bench with Nazir Muhammad actually playing 6 minutes. That's how you know the game was a write-off. The Nuggets also didn't give 30 minutes to anyone apart from Will Barton, and I think probably some congratulations are in order for Will Barton. He hit a shot. He actually hit 3 of them. He missed another 9 for 8-4-4, and not a great performance from Barton. You can cycle him in and out of lineups at this point. Nikola Jokic, only 19 minutes, 7-2-2 with 2 blocks. Yusuf Nurkic played 17 minutes and went 6-5-2 with 2 blocks. So, of course, why wouldn't you play Joffrey Lavernier, 28, and he went 12-10-3? Figuring out what Mike Malone can do with the centers is absolutely baffling at this point. You know, Jokic and Nurkic are so far above Lavernier, but then they play significantly less minutes than him in this one. It's really tough to work it out. Jokic is a 12-teamer still. Nurkic isn't, and Lavernier is a long way down the list there. DJ Augustine bounced back from a couple of poor performances, 15-2-4 with a couple of steals and a couple of threes, while Emmanuel Mudiay went 15-2-4 in his 27 minutes. I still don't think that it's hard to own Augustine at this point when you just need more guaranteed type production. Gaz Harris had one of his better games, just 27 minutes for Gazza, 17-4-5, 3 threes, two steals on 6 of 10 shooting. He'd been a little bit down in the dumps, and he's a fine streaming option, but that's really it. And Ken Faried, 23 minutes for 4 points. Shouldn't be holding on to Ken Faried. The San Antonio Spurs and the Utah Jazz, a pretty low total game, but at least the Jazz kept it close. They lost by 2 in the end. LaMarcus went 14-7-4, and Kawhi went 18-2 with a couple of blocks. So decent nights from those guys. But my boy Kyle Anderson played 23 minutes and went 11-3-4 with a steal and a 3. Nice shooting night from Anderson. Don't get too excited about it. He's more of a dynasty league guy. Manu, 14-2-2 in 19 minutes. Good night from Manu. Timmy Duncan had 3 points. Danny Green had 2 points. Tony Parker had 11-3-4, and it's really tough to own any of those guys in the majority of our formats. It's always tough as a wing player going up against the Spurs. That didn't really affect Rod Hood, who went 23-7-4 on 10 of 19 shooting with 1-3. He has been spectacular over probably the last week. I'm a massive fan of Rod. And Joe Ingles, a huge... Actually, shout out to Joe Ingles. He came on this podcast over the All-Star break. Adrian Wojnarowski must have heard him on the podcast and then got him to go onto Woj's podcast, on the Vertical podcast. So thank you, to Joe, to getting his podcast priority order in action and going on Red Rock first. Thank you for that, Joe. And also make sure you do check out his, if you haven't heard of it, Adrian Wojnarowski does have a podcast. It's just a little thing. He doesn't have that big a following. You might want to hear Joe on the Vertical podcast with Woj. So, good that I was able to get Joe out there and for Woj to follow my lead and get him onto the show. Obviously, I'm 100% taking the piss with all of that. And of course, Woj is a much bigger podcast than mine. But anyway, Joe Ingles was great. He had 13 points. He hit all four of his shots down the stretch. He hit 3 triples and had a steal, had an assist. And we know that he is the best inbound passer in the game, according to himself. So, played a lot down the stretch here, and it was he's an important part of this team. He might not play big minutes, but he's an important part. Gordie Hayward, he got Kawhi'd 12-4, while Gobert had just 4 points on 2 shots, but 10 boards, 2 assists, 1 steal, and 2 blocks. They still did a bit in other areas. Derek Favors struggled through 27 minutes, while Trey Lyles had 6 points in his 19 minutes. Doesn't stop me liking Trey Lyles, though. Shelvin Mack, 13-4-2 with a 3 and a steal in his 30 minutes, and just continues to confound common sense to me. Portland and Sacramento. CJ McCollum, 33-3, 5 triples, 2 steals. A big night from him on 11 of 20 shooting. When Dame Lillard went 22-2-8 with a steal, a block, and 3 triples. But the biggest fantasy news out of this team is Mo Harkless, who played 33 minutes, 20-16, 2 threes and 2 steals. He should be owned in basically every league that is still running at this point, because he's going to get minutes. He's looking fantastic. He can score. He grabs boards. He hits threes. He gets steals. I love Mo Harkless. Mason Plumlee, 12-9-3 with 3 blocks. When he gets minutes, the production comes. It's just guessing when that's going to happen that's the problem. And Al-Farouq Aminu just played the 21 minutes here because Gerald Henderson was playing well. He played 32 here, Henderson. Ed Davis, not his best night, just 3 boards with a block in his 20 minutes. And Noah Vonleh, still stealing 8 minutes a game, had 2 points. For the Kings, DeMarcus Cousins was back, and he was fantastic as well. 30-9, 2 steals, 3 blocks, 1 triple. Big night from Boogie. And Seth Curry made another start, played 34 minutes and went 17-6-4 with 3 triples. Huge night from Curry. He was helped by the late scratch from Darren Collison and the fact that Rudy Gay was resting here. The Kings are resting. They're not resting. They're keeping their draft pick. That's what's happening with them. Willie Cauley-Stein got another start, 9-5 with a steal and 3 blocks, and that's more representative of what we should expect from him, but that's ownable in most formats. Jim Anderson played 36 minutes as the starting shooting guard and had 7 points. I don't care that he's starting. He's not someone that you need to really pay too much attention to. The Kings started Rondo, Curry, and Anderson as a 1-2-3 combo. That is just a shitful combination. Ben McLemore, 27 minutes, 7-2-1 with a 3 and a steal. He just cannot get anything happening. And finally, Quincy Acey, not in the starting lineup. Cannot be more impressed with that. 8 points with 2 triples in 15 minutes for Acey, but he is restricted to your 20-team formats. The next game of the night, the Los Angeles Lakers and the Los Angeles Clippers, who will play each other again. The Lakers' box score is a joke. Jordy Clarkson only played 31 minutes due to a leg issue. He is probable for next game. 10 points with a couple of steals and a couple of threes. Julius Randle missed all 6 of his shots to end with 4 points, had 12 rebounds and 4 assists. And the leading scorer on the Lakers was an old wing who probably shouldn't still be playing in the league. and is well past. He's one of the worst players in the league, and I'm not talking about Kobe Bryant. It was Meta World Peace, who played 19 minutes and had 17 points, and he thinks he can play 3 to 4 more years. Well, maybe if the Lakers want to be bad for 3 to 4 years, he can, but he cannot play. He is shooting under 30% from the field this season, but a big night, 17-5, 2 steals and 2 threes. Don't get too excited. Ryan Kelly got 25 minutes. Marcelo Huertas went 9-3-4 in his 30. D'Angelo Russell went 12-3-1. I don't really understand. No, that's not true. That's not the right word. I don't think you have to own Russell, Clarkson, and Randall. You probably should, but you don't have to. There's going to be a lot of off nights from this team. Kobe, speaking of off nights, he was 2 of 12 for 6 points, 2 rebounds, and 2 steals. Talk about going from a massive night to a stinker. And Roy Hibbert, who I was talking up, and he'd been getting stacks of blocks. He'd had 10 blocks over his last 3 games. His minutes were well up. Well, he played 16 and went 0-4 with no blocks. Yuck. The Clippers, they didn't need to do much here. Chris Paul, 25-4-8 with 2 steals and 2 threes. DeAndre Jordan went 7-14, and J.J. Redick had 9 points, and Blake Griffin just the 17 minutes. So my theory of him playing that one game to get his suspension out of the way is out of the water, but he's not going to play many minutes. He is just going to sort of ease his way back. There's no way that he is right to come back, and he literally did come back to get that suspension out of the way, but he's obviously going to play the rest of the way here. Now, Doc Rivers said some interesting things. Blake's not going to play back-to-backs. Neck minute? No, yeah, we're going to play him tomorrow. So we don't know what to expect. At this point, we've got Blake as probable for tomorrow, but Doc has said two opposite things in the last 24 hours, so we don't really know what to believe. We'll have to wait until tomorrow to see whether Griffin plays. You obviously know the upside for him is massive, but I would not be expecting 30 minutes. I would barely be expecting 28 minutes against the Lakers in Wednesday's game. Jeff Green, with the resting of a lot of guys here, or the limits in their minutes, and Griffin barely playing, he played 31 minutes. Jeff Green went 21-3-2, had a triple one, but there is no reason to get overly excited about Jeffy Green. And Cole Aldrich played 19 minutes, 6-8 with a block. You know my thoughts on Cole Aldrich. The last game of the night, the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Golden State Warriors. Talked about Wigo, talked about Shabazz. Let's look at Zach LaVine, who had been terrible, but was really good here. 16-4-5, 4 triples and 4 steals, one of his best performances in recent times. Well, Gorgui Dieng, I don't think you really can afford to hold him at the moment. The hip injury is bothering him. He's playing very few minutes compared to what he was earlier. Just 19 here, 10-5 with 2 blocks. It's still not a terrible performance, but you might be better served from getting someone else into a lineup. Karl-Anthony Towns played 45, went 20-12-4, had 2 blocks. And probably for the first time this year, actually hurt your percentages. He went 8 of 18 from the field, and he went 4 of 8 from the free throw line. But we know that he's pretty decent. Rick Rubio, not his best night, just 2 points on 1 of 6 shooting, 4 rebounds, 9 assists, and a steal. And just some ridiculous hot takes coming out on Twitter from Timberwolves people, other non-Timberwolves people, that Rubio's holding the Timberwolves back, that he's been a terrible disappointment, that the Timberwolves should look to trade Rubio for Rondo in the offseason, which is just ludicrous to me. Rubio is the second best player on this team, maybe the third, maybe Wiggins will overtake him. He's the second best player on this team behind Towns. He has been the best player on this team before Towns started his ascension. A lot of people do not see that. They think that he can't shoot, therefore he's bad. It's completely a false narrative, but it's out there for a lot of people. And you know what? It's out there for people in the actual league as well, because the Timberwolves were looking to get rid of him, and it just makes no sense. I know that he struggles with his shot, but Jim Butler got five points today on bad shooting. Does that mean he's shit? No. Now, Rubio is a fantastic player. The Warriors, big minutes for these guys. Bogut, 32 minutes, 10-15-5, a steal and 2 blocks. Great, just won't happen again. Draymond, 12-6-9, 3 steals, 2 blocks. Klay, 28-3-3 with 4 triples. And Steph went 21-6-15, 3 steals, 4 triples. Big games from all the big names, but Steph went 7 of 25 from the field. That's a massive drop for a guy who's a 50% shooter from the field normally. Harry Barnes had a good night, 20-5 with 4 triples. Really starting to play better at this second half of the season, and I'll reiterate it now, for as much shit as I've given Barnes this season, he will be a guy that has a much improved year next year, regardless of where he ends up. Festus Zeli only got 5 minutes coming back from his knee problem, and Andre Iguodala was back. He played 19 minutes, had 4 points, but he's not going to be a fantasy factor down the stretch here. Also, Sean Livingston hit all 6 of his shots to go for 14 points in 21 minutes. All right, that does it for the reviews of the game. I'm going to take a quick break first for a word from our sponsors. Then we're going to have a song, and then we're going to come back and talk DFS action for Wednesday's games. Show. I was just reading an article that appeared on my Twitter timeline by Dan Wojcie of the Orange County Register talking about Blake Griffin. And we're talking just before we went to the break there about the Doc Rivers confusing quotes and how he said, you know, Griffin's not going to play back-to-backs and then backtrack. No, he's definitely going to play. Well, the article from Dan Wojcie, if I get the part here, where does it say? Okay, the Clippers have 5 games left. If they stick to their plans to sit him, Griffin, on the second night of back-to-backs, Griffin won't play Wednesday and he won't play in the regular season finale. Which is it? Is he sitting in back-to-backs? I don't know. It's pretty confusing when you're getting multiple people saying one thing, other people saying the other thing. I don't know where it's at with Griffin and the Clippers at the moment. But there's a big chance he doesn't play on Wednesday. He clearly isn't right. Brooklyn and Washington, the first game up for DFS. There's 8 games on Wednesday. The Wizards are favored by 14.5. The total is 208 points. Let's look at the point guard, Shane Larkin, at 4,500. Yeah, his salary has risen, but it still hasn't risen high enough to completely forget about using him. He's averaging 25 across his last 5, 26 across his last 3. He dropped 26 in the last game. And if he has a game where he actually scores decent points, then his number will go to 30 because he gets you assists, he gets you decent rebounds, he gets you steals, and he can do all those things. He could be an 8-assist, 4-steal, you know, sort of night, 5 rebound, and then you throw in 10, 12, 15 points on top of it, could be a big performance. 4,500, love him. Johnny Wall's dropped down to 9,400. He hasn't been quite the same guy, but this is a really tasty matchup for Johnny. Should be able to get 45 points here, so I think he is a pretty decent guy to play as well. Ramon Sessions, Don Sloan, don't think there's much to love there. Shooting guards for the Nets, I don't know what to expect from them. We don't know who's going to play. Wayne Ellington, Markel Brown, Sergei Karasev, he's listed as a small forward on FanDuel, though. We don't know who's going to play there, so it's really hard to use any of them. Brad Beal's at 5,800. It's a great matchup for him. He is averaging 29 across the last 3. I think that Beal becomes a pretty nice tournament play. Now, he only had 24 points in his last game, but for him to get 30, you don't think that it definitely doesn't feel like a big stretch to do that. Sean Kilpatrick scores a lot, but he doesn't score DFS-wise. He's averaging just 15 points across his last 3, and at 3,700, even that's not enough to make me want to use him. At small forward, We've got Otto Porter's at 5,400. He just feels like he's going to give you 25 to 26. Now, it's a decent matchup, so he could give you that just basic 5X value. I don't think he's a great tournament option, but he is an okay cash play. Rondé Hollis-Jefferson's at 38. He's not giving me anything anywhere near enough. Bojan Bogdanović has rested the last two games. Whether he comes back or not, he is restricted just to a tournament play. And Sergei Karasev, who knows what we're going to get out of him. I do believe in him, but I just don't believe in him getting enough minutes to put up enough numbers to be useful. The power forwards, Markieff Morris is at 5,500. He's averaging 33 across his last three in 34 minutes. The matchup's great. The situation's good. The salary's low. Fine with using him. Thomas Robinson's salary has risen by $1,500. He is priced at 6,000 now, and that makes it tough to use him. People might be going, I need to get Robinson because Thad Young's out, but at 6,000, you need 30 points out of Tom Rob. Now, he's averaging 32 points across his last five, so he could get there, but the value in it has evaporated. I still think that you can use him and you can feel relatively confident about it, but the massive upside, the must-playness of Thomas Robinson's not there. Nene at 3,900. Don't know why I've even mentioned him. Jared Dudley, Chris McCullough, Willie Reed will get a bit of a bump with Lopez and Young out, but it appears that Robinson and Henry Sims are preferred over Willie Reed and Chris McCullough over Willie Reed at this point. So neither Reed nor McCullough are really going to be too much in play. These centres, we'll talk about Henry Sims here because he is replacing Brook Lopez. He's at $4,000, $3,700. I'd be way more in. I think that he can retain value, though, at 4,000. I think he can be used, but I'm not massively confident in it. Marcin Gortat at 6,400. This is an awesome opportunity for hopefully him to get 32 minutes. We'll see whether that occurs. But his last three games against the Nets, he's averaging 35 points. They're not a tough team for big men to put up numbers. He should be able to go for 30-plus in this one. So I'm pretty happy about using Gortat as well. The Detroit Pistons and the Orlando Magic is the next game that's up on the slate. The Magic are favored by two. The total is 208.5 points. Let's start by looking at the point guards. Reg Jackson's at 5,900. He's averaging 30 across his last three. So he's looking to be a decent play. His last three against Orlando is averaging 36 points. He's a tournament option for me, but I'm not overly excited. Lord Alfred Payton's at 5,800. I'd take Jackson over Payton, but again, not massively into it. Payton has done well against the Pistons in the past, averaging 37 across his last three there. But his recent performances, he's just right on 30 minutes and not getting enough. Brandon Jennings, CJ Watson, Steve Blake, Spencer Dinwiddie, Shabazz Napier. Not sure much is really going on with those guys that bears mentioning. Shooting guards, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope's at 5,400. Really bad matchup. The Magic are restricting opposition shooting guards. He has been terrible himself, averaging 15. But I don't mind him in a tournament because this is a blow-up opportunity for him. I'd also watch if that salary dips to 5,000. Love it. Vic Oladipo's at 8,400. He's averaging 42 across the last three. 42 at 8,400, it's not quite there. So, I don't think so. I'm not getting involved in Vic Oladipo at this point. It's not bad, and I just don't think his ceiling's that high when you're paying that much for him. The small forwards, Evan Fournier is at 5,400. He's always a decent guy to look at in a tournament, but he's not a bad cash option, but there's still a lot of risk associated. Marcus Morris went from 57 points two games ago to 7 today. Oh, that's brutal. He's at 6,200. That feels just a little bit high for Marcus Morris. Stan Johnson, Mario Hezonja. Things would obviously have to change for those rookies to be in bigger roles. Power forwards, Toby Harris is at 6,400. You feel like you're going to get 30 from Toby most nights. Plus, he heads back to Orlando. This is an opportunity to really use Toby Harris to get maybe a 35, 36 point night out of him. Love him here. Aaron Gordon's at 5,700. The salary is really nice. The production hasn't been great, but it is still 26 over his last five, which is okay. Dropped a nice 35 on the last one. So I think he's an okay guy. And he might relish going up against Toby Harris. I think he's in play. Andrew Nicholson's at 4,300. That's too high. 3,700 would be okay because he is a 20, 21, 22 point guy, but there's a ton of risk associated with using Andrew Nicholson. The centers, Nick Vucevic has been fantastic since returning. Just a casual 45 off the bench in his last game. He's priced at 8,000, but when you're taking on Andre Drummond, it's a fair bump. You would imagine that even if he doesn't start, he's going to play big 30-plus minutes, and 40 points should not be a tough task. Andre Drummond, on the other hand, he gets a nice matchup, but his free throws have been putrid. His performance is averaging just 32 across his last three. At 8,000, I'm definitely taking Vucevic over him. Bainesy is at 3,500. He had a nice 19-point game today, but it all comes down to if Drummond sits, Baines plays, and Baines produces. So it's only a tournament play unless we saw that Drummond was out for any reason. The next game, the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Indiana Pacers. No spread has been released for this one just yet. Let's look at the point guards. Kyrie is priced at 7,200. Not his best performance today, but he's basically a fantasy point per minute. And if the game is close, which we imagine it should be relatively close, then Kyrie's not a terrible option. I probably wouldn't use him, but I could see him going for 35 in this one. Georgie Hill is at 4,700. That salary's dipped significantly. His last three against Cleveland, he's averaged 29 points, and that's something to pay attention to because Kyrie, not a good defender. Point guards on this team, they don't defend well. If you get 25 points out of George Hill, you've beaten value. Now, he's averaging just 19. No, let's try that again. He's averaging 16 in his last five games. That's not very much, obviously. So I would look at him in a tournament and go, his ownership's going to be low. He could go for 27 or 28 here and really bring home some value. But the chances are not that high. Matthew Dellavedova, Ty Lawson, not much to really like with those guys. Let's look at the shooting guards. Monte Ellis, 6,100. It's just too overpriced at this point. J.R. Smith at 4,500. Hey, that was a nice 26-point game he had today. But we know that in a cash game, you can't rely. You throw him into a tournament, but he won't have another game like that two in a row. Rod Stuckey's at 3,800. Nice game in the last one. Not using him. Iman Shumpert, Solomon Hill, Joseph Young, and Jordy McRae. They're not interesting. Small forwards, good matchup. Paul George, LeBron James, 8,900 for George. That means he needs 45 points, and he's taking LeBron James on, so that means I probably want to steer clear. LeBron, on the other hand, 10,600, well, he's got Paul George. That's not a good spot. 10,600 means he needs 53 points. He is averaging 53 across his last three. He's averaging 53 across his last five. But historically, in the last three against Paul George and the Pacers, he's averaging 45. It's a bit of a drop-off, not loving it whatsoever. CJ Miles, Richard Jefferson, you must be able to predict the future if you think they're going to have if you have them in a winning DFS lineup. Power forwards, Kev Love is at 7,000. I just don't like it. Miles Turner is at 5,400. Gone to the bench, he's actually produced more since going to the bench than as a starter recently, but 5,400 just feels a little bit high. He's only averaging 22 points across his last three. Tristan Thompson's minutes are in flux. He's at 4,600, and he can be a guy that gets you 25, 30 points, but there's no trust in it whatsoever. Lavoie Allen as a starter, he's not doing anything. He's barely playing. He's playing about 12 minutes a game. You know how much I love those roles. The center's Jan Mahimi is at 52. He's been good, but 5,200 against a Cavs team is not something that I'm all that interested in. Same, I'll say, with Tim Mozgov and Jordy Hill. New Orleans and Boston is the next game up. The Celtics are favored by 14. The total is 208.5 points. Let's look at the point guard situation here. We've got Marcus Smart's at 4,300. Evan Turner's been ruled out, so you'll see that Smart's minutes are up a bit here. Avery Bradley is playing after missing the last game due to personal reasons. So Marcus Smart at 4,300. Nice matchup for him. 4,300 is not a big salary. Can he get 25 points? It's a risk. I think he's a tournament play, but he's been pretty solid lately. His last five games have ranged from 20 to 27 points. Not a big discrepancy. Isaiah Thomas at 7,700. I really like him in this matchup. Yeah, he should be able to get 40 points. And Timmy Frazier, yes, he's at 5,000, but he's averaging 39 across his last three. 32 across his last five. The Celtics defense is good, but they're not good enough to stop him getting 25 points, I wouldn't have thought. So Tim Frazier, lock and load. Tone Douglas, not doing a huge amount recently. 5,600 for him. You pay 600 extra for suckier performances than what you get from Tim Frazier. So Douglas can be left alone unless you want to go super contrarian in a tournament situation. The shooting guards, Avery Bradley's at 5,800. You don't mind Bradley at 5,800. I think that he's an okay play, but there's going to be better guys out there. Small forward, Jay Crowder. No Evan Turner, as I mentioned. Jay Crowder is interesting. He's at 6,200, but that just feels a bit high. The salary's risen 300, and that probably takes him out of my calculations. But there's a couple of guys in New Orleans who are worth looking at. Jim Ennis is at 3,900. He's averaging 22 across his last three in 30 minutes. Not a great performance today in his 30 minutes, but he is a decent tournament player against a team that is allowing some pretty decent stats across the wing there. And Jordy Hamilton at 4,600 is averaging 26 points as well. He's definitely worth looking at too. Yeah, the extra $700 makes me a little bit scared about using Jordy Hamilton, but he is in play. Luke Babbitt at 5,000, he's also got to be considered. He's averaging 27 across his last three. It's a great matchup for him as well. I think you've got to look at Ennis, Hamilton, and Babbitt all for the Pelicans here. Power forwards, no cash. No cash for Amir Johnson. No cash for Jared Sullinger. They could all go off. We know they could. And Sullinger's last three against the Pelicans is giving you 42 points per game. So that's pretty bloody impressive. But how can you trust them? How can you trust what New Orleans is going to do? You can't, is the correct answer. So you might throw him into a tournament, but no trust at all. Dante Cunningham, Jonas Jerebko. Yeah. Centers, Alexei Ajinta is at 4,300. He played good minutes today. He only put up 20 points, but I still believe in him against the Celtics front court, which we know is pretty poor. Olynyk at 3,500. He's been really bad. He's averaging 12.5 points. I do love him as a tournament punt here. Minimum salary. Bad team. Maybe he gets some extra run. It might not work out, but I think he's definitely in line for a tournament because he can go for 40. And you get 40 points out of a $3,500 salary. That's it's cash making. Cash making. What an awkward phrase that is. Charlotte and the New York Knicks. Jerian Grant's at 3,600. He likely will start. Will he get enough minutes? Probably not. But his last three, he's averaging 26 minutes, 19 points. It's not great at 3,600, but you get 19 points at 3,600. You've made value. And you just hope that he can go for 25, 27. And the Hornets have been not great against point guards. This could be an opportunity for him. Kemba is at 8,100. Speaking of not good against point guards, he takes on the Knicks. 8,100 for Kemba. Yeah, 40 points. He's in New York. He does love playing there. I think that Kemba is a pretty good option at 8,100. Calderon, he won't play again this season. I don't know that for sure. That's a gut feel. Shooting guards, Jeremy Lin, 4,200. If Batum's out, yes. If Batum's in, probably no. Langston Galloway at 4,000. I think Galloway is a great option here. Hopefully they can decide they're going to play him 30 over Vucic and Aflalo. Trust in that it is low, but he's still averaging 25 across his last three in just 26 minutes. So he is an option to me. Courtney Lee at 4,300. Doesn't get any sort of juices flowing. Sasha Vucic had 30 in the last game at 3,700. Can I, in all good conscience, recommend him again? No, I can't. And Aaron Aflalo at 41. He's a tournament option who can go off, but most likely won't. Small forward, Melo, he is going to play after resting the last game. He's at 8,500. If he gets 25 minutes again, there is no point in using Melo. There's no point in using Melo. Nick Batum at 7,600. I think if he plays, he plays limited minutes, so I don't think we look at him. And Cle Anthony Early got the start last game for Melo, but he's not going to be getting the start in this one, so we can leave him out of it. Porzingis.
Porzingis.
Yep. He is minimums. No, he's not. Where did I get minimum salary from? I was looking at something completely different. He's doubtful. He's probably not going to play. So Derek Williams at almost minimum salary. He's at 3,700. You have to look at him. He's averaging just, it's pedestrian. It's 21 points across his last three. But at 3,700, 21 points is fine. He goes for 27 points and you've given tremendous value back to a team. Love Williams here. Kevin Seraphin is at 3,600 and he's been getting decent minutes too. 16 points in his last three. He could go for 20 points. He could be worthwhile. Obviously, I prefer Williams over Seraphin, but he's in play. Marvin Williams at 5,600. It's ease-wise, it's not a good matchup, but without Porzingis, I think that changes things a little bit. Marvin at 30 points, he's hard to rely upon. He's more of a cash game play. While Frank Kaminsky got some extra run today, but I'm not overly interested in using him. At center, Cody Zeller is back to being a center. He's at 4,800. He just doesn't do enough for me DFS-wise at the moment. Rob Lopez at 5,900. Good matchup. Salary's increased. Minutes could be reduced. He's a stay away. While Koch is at 3,500. Yeah, don't think I can really get behind Koch in this one at minimum salary. He'd need 25 minutes, and I'm just not confident in him getting those minutes. Houston and Dallas is the next game up. The Rockets are favored by 2, and the total is 207.5 points. Point guards. Darren Williams, don't think we're going to be seeing him. So JJ Barea, yes, he's up to 5,900. Yes, Patrick Beverley's a tough matchup, but 5,900, he should be able to get 30 points. I think he's in play. He's not the best option because a few things are working against him, and you might be able to make some money by going a different direction, but he's not a complete stay away. Pat Beverley at 5,200, it's tough to rely on him, and we're not going to be relying on Ray Felton either, or Andrew Gardlock, surprisingly. At shooting guard, Jim Harden. Yep, just pencil him in now. Don't even pencil him. Pen him in. 10,900. The salary's big, but you're going to get 55 out of him pretty much most nights. He's averaging 52 the last three times these two teams meet. Love him. Devin Harris at 3,900. Had a nice 27 in the last game, but just not enough to me for me to rely upon it. And Wes Matthews is now at 5,100. And he's been giving you nice, solid numbers. It's a good matchup for Wes. So I think that that sort of works in his favor, but a few other things don't. So he's not the top of my list of guys to use. Small forwards, Justin Anderson is intriguing. Rick Carlisle speaking fairly glowingly about him. He's at 4,000. I reckon you definitely have to look at him. It's the Rockets bump. It's the minutes will be there. He's producing, or he's averaging 23 points across his last three at 4,000. Absolutely fine with using Justin Anderson. Trevor Reza, on the other hand, well, he faces off against Justin Anderson. He's at 5,600. He's averaging 28 across his last three. He's averaging 32 the last three times they take on Dallas. I think that he's a fine guy to look at. Mick Beasley, is he going to get 28 minutes? He's going to get 9 minutes. If you can guess that, please let me know in advance. 5,300 for Beasley. Maybe a tournament. That's probably it. Corey Brewer, KJ McDaniels, there's no interest in any of those guys. At power forward, we've got Dirk is at 7,100. Rockets bump for Dirk, maybe. His production has been well down, averaging 22 just over his last five games. This looks like it could be a good spot, but you have to bank on a Dirk turnaround. Clint Capela at 42, got some extra run with Dwight Howard limited by fouls in the last game. He picked up 28 points in that one, but he had been averaging 23 across his last five anyway. It's just tough to rely on him. David Lee, one thing about Clint Capela, in his last five games, he's averaging 46 points per 36 minutes. So you know if an extended run appears, he's going to be able to put up some numbers. David Lee, no thanks. Donatas Montiunas, no minutes. Dwight Powell, figure out what the Mavericks are doing with that center position. You're doing better than me. Speaking of the Mavericks center, Zaza Pachulia, Salah Mejri, any use in any of those guys? Probably not. Well, Dwight Howard's at 6,500, and that 6,500 is more probably in line with the Dwight Howard who actually touches the ball on offense. And that's not the Dwight that we've got at the moment. OKC and Portland, the Thunder got a pretty easy victory on Tuesday. There's a chance they could rest their guys, but apparently the coach, and that's according to my source here, Gone Fishing, who's tweeted at me, says the coach said no rest. He's hoping that it means players get starts and play limited minutes. And I think if you've said there's no rest, and that's pretty much likely what they're going to do, so that does make some risk associated with the Thunder. They're also locked into the three set. They can't go higher, they can't go lower. So any incentive to play these guys big minutes is not there. Dame Lillard at 8,000. The Blazers are still fighting. 8,000 for Dame Lillard against Russ Westbrook, who might not be going full pace. Although that's hard to say for Westbrook. Fine with using Lillard, but he is not a reliable cash game play. Russ Westbrook's at 10,700. 10,700, I'd take Jim Harden at that very similar salary. Yeah, Westbrook's still obviously awesome, but there's a risk associated with it. The shooting guards in this one, let's look at CJ McCollum, and I do like him. He's at 6,900. He dropped 40 today. He's averaging 34.5 across the last three. I think that you can almost get 35 out of him pretty easily. Gerald Henderson had a nice 21-point game, and he's priced at 3,800. Can he get 20 points? I think he's an opportunity to get 20 points, but it's not a great one. Alan Crabb, Deion Waiters, Andre Robertson, Randy Foy, Anthony Morrow, Pat Connaughton, a lot of wing players who are really bad. Now, Waiters dropped 35 today. He's at minimum salary. Hey, that's a tournament play that could work out. I just don't think you should be expecting another 35 out of Deion Waiters. Small forward, there's some value here. Mo Harkless, 4,400. He's averaging just a casual 33 across his last three games. I wouldn't be expecting 33, but 27, 28 should be plenty to retain value at 4,400, while Kev Durant's at 10,500. And the risk associated with him is the same as Westbrook, but he had 51 points in his 29 today. And he's just that extra couple hundred bucks cheaper. I think if you're going to spend up at small forward, he's a guy to look at. Al-Farouq Aminu is a roller coaster guy at the moment. 5,400 for him. He's a tournament play, maybe. He goes from 32 minutes to 21 minutes. The production is 50 points to 10 points. He's just way out of control. Serge Ibaka is 5,500. Yeah, a 24-point performance today. I don't mind that price. I think he's worth a tournament punt. Ed Davis struggled and has been struggling a little bit. 4,600 just feels a bit excessive at the moment, especially with a negative correlation with ease rankings. The centers, Enes Kanter, 5,300. No. Steve Adams, 46. No. Mason Plumlee, 53. Well, he's averaging 31 across the last three, and that includes a bit of a stinker in there too. It's just a real terrible matchup against the Thunder, so he's not someone that I'm overly keen on. Speaking of not overly keen, the next game is the Los Angeles Clippers and the Los Angeles Lakers. It's a back-to-back. Blake, who knows if Blake is sitting, but there's a chance that none of these Clippers guys get to 30 minutes. So you might look at Chris Paul and go, this is great. He had 48 today in 9,700 in only 23 minutes. I think that's probably, it's hard to rely on him to do that. But Chris Paul is averaging 59 points per 36 minutes over his last five games. Don't think I'd spend the 9,700 on him here. D'Angelo Russell at 45, not doing anything to really endear him to me at the moment. Shooting guards, JJ Redick, too much risk associated with him playing, and he's not producing much anyway. Jordy Clarkson at 5,600, not doing enough in a terrible matchup. Kobe, punt in the tournament, maybe. Jamal Crawford, 49. Yeah, 27 average across his last three is pretty impressive. He had four today, and there's definitely a risk associated with Jamal Crawford. There's risk associated with basically everybody in this game. Does Jeff Green get 30 minutes? I'd venture a guess and say no. He had 31 points today. It's a great matchup. Will it happen again? I think you've missed your opportunity. Wes Johnson, Luke Marmute, Paul Pierce might return. Ryan Kelly, not much to really love with any of those guys. Will Meta World Peace have 30 points? I think we can go ahead and say no. Power forwards, Julius Randle at 6,600. Don't mind Randle here at 6,600. I think he's okay, but he'd want to be better than what he was in today's game. Larry Nance will be back. He's at minimum salary. Just not feeling it. While Blake at 8,600, when you're probably going to get less than 25 minutes out of him, is not a common sense investment, I don't think. The centers, DeAndre Jordan, yeah, he's good, but worry a bit about the minutes here. 8,300 is an expensive amount to pay. Tariq Black, Roy Hibbert, Cole Aldrich, Robert Sacre, there is pretty much nothing to like from that whole entire game. Let's have a look at the DFS picks of the day. At point guard, Shane Larkin, 45, Timmy Frazier, 5,000, and Isaiah Thomas, 77. You could actually add Dame Lillard in there as well. Shooting guards, Langston Galloway, 4,000, CJ McCollum, 6,900, and Jim Harden, 10,900. Small forwards, Mo Harkless, 44, Trev Ariza, 56, and Kev Durant, 10,500. Power forwards, Derek Williams, 37, Markieff Morris, 55, and there is no high-priced power forwards that I have any interest in. The centers, Alexia Zhinsa, 43, Marcin Gortat, 64, and Nikola Vucevic, $8,000. Don't forget, if you are watching this podcast, subscribe on YouTube, subscribe on iTunes, and you know what? If you won your league this season, give yourself a shout-out in your iTunes review. Go and leave a review on there and say, you know what? I won my league. Shout-out to me. Put it in the review. I'll read it. People will read it when they go look up the podcast, and you'll be get a sponsor of the day. And it helps the podcast out immensely, too. Don't forget to check out SeatGeek using that promo code REDROCK and get yourself some NBA tickets. Thank you again to Simon for coming on. Make sure you're checking out Basketball Monster and the Twitter account at BaskMonster for late-breaking news, injury switches, and check out the site for all the projection changes that those injury announcements cause. We are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.